I'm Emma Taylor.
I'm Joanna Shanks.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
So Emma, what is your true crime chat you can share with me and our listeners this week?
Well, I know you always like a TV recommendation. I feel like I'm your personal TV guide sometimes, in a good way.
You are.
A lot of the time we'll be sitting watching something fairly mundane and I'll see something, you know, you get the previews when you scroll through the channels.
Yeah.
And it's like, shocking, the most evil murderers in the world. And I'm like, Richard, record it, quickly record it. So that's how I generally find them all. And then on a casual Saturday night when he's wanting to relax and watch something nice, I'm like, ooh, can we watch the one about cannibals? And he's like, can we watch it tomorrow maybe?
Do you know, it's funny you should say that because I put Netflix on last night to watch some that program Superstore. It's like a silly sitcom. It's lighthearted. It's good. And as soon as I put it on, the first thing that came up that was recommended was crime scene something. It was something new. And the first thing I said was, ooh, that looks like something I want to watch. And like Sean just burst out laughing.
We're so predictable at this point. Yeah. Ridiculous.
But yeah, you are basically my TV guide. And also, like, I feel like all the pages and groups that I like and follow, all the TV recommendations I'm given, podcasts, I just feel like you're like my personal like recommendation person. I just know that if you like something, there's a really strong chance that I'll like it.
I feel like all the
things that I like, I'm like, I can't take credit for any of them because they've all been recommended by Emma.
The irony is I've probably had them recommended to me or I've read it somewhere as well. This is how the internet is. This is why the internet is so good and so bad, because it takes up all my time and I feel like I've got an endless list of entertainment and media that I want to consume and I don't have enough brain space or time for all of it. Which is why we do recommend things that we've seen. So the thing that I wanted to recommend is on Channel 5. It is a documentary about the disappearance of Shannon Matthews, which it's just called The Disappearance of Shannon Matthews. So anyone that is not familiar with the case, Shannon Matthews was a 9-year-old girl who vanished in the north of England, Dewsbury, I think, in 2008. And most people will know about the case. I don't feel that it's a massive spoiler to say that she was found alive and her family knew about the whole set of circumstances. So it's a really interesting one. The mother had heard about Madeleine McCann's disappearance and saw the money getting thrown at that and saw the attention that the parents were getting. And essentially that inspired her. So it goes through it all, but it's actually because we already know the outcome and we know that she is alive, thankfully. It's still really interesting to see them approach it as though it was a possible kidnap scenario. It was a possible, are we looking to retrieve a body? The way that they, just the way they progressed the investigation, how they spoke to people, and also how the community pulled together, because it's a really, honestly, quite poor estate that she lived on. A lot of the people there weren't wealthy, didn't have a lot of money to their name, but they all banded together and showed this real community spirit. So I can only imagine the fallout after it all came out. So I've seen the first one and the second one is actually on tonight, so I'm recording it. And they are just about to find her. So they've left it on a bit of a cliffhanger, so much so that my husband Googled it. it's really well done. I know, but I was trying my best. I was really trying not to let on. But yeah, it's well done, I would say. And it speaks to her best friend, who was the last person to see her on the day that she went missing, who also got to make a media appeal and that kind of thing. So really interesting. Shows a lot of footage from the time and just lets you judge the behaviour of the parental figures as well.
What channel did you say that was on?
Channel 5.
Right, I'm going to watch that. I remember when she disappeared, And I remember the concern, you know, and it did get the attention that they were probably craving. But yeah, the whole circumstance of it was just, it was awful. It was so sad.
I think it was like 24 full days she was missing for.
Was it not her uncle?
It was her mum's boyfriend's uncle.
Oh, okay. Right, okay.
And he was one of the people that they hadn't looked into at all.
Yeah. She was hiding under the bed, wasn't she?
I think, yeah, that's when they found her.
It was in a divan. She was in a divan bed.
Yeah. Like one of the lift up ones, wasn't it? Yeah. So horrible scenario. Poor girl, who now, I believe, has a different name. And obviously there's no update on her, which hopefully is a good thing. Hopefully she's just living her life somewhere.
Did she get taken into care?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the mum had seven kids, so I believe
yes.
There'd actually been concerns raised by social care previously, prior to this.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the type of thing that you would just expect to come out of the blue, is it? Somebody pretending that their kid has been kidnapped if there hasn't been any other kind of abuse or neglect.
Really sad. They called it low-level neglect, I think, was what they'd classed it as. But even just her behaviour, obviously knowing the outcome's a little bit different, but if you go and watch it, knowing that she's found safe and well, just watch the mum and the fact that she didn't seem that concerned for some of it. She's laughing and joking. Apparently they were still having people over for drinks at their house the whole time she was missing. Very bizarre. So yeah, I recommend watching that. Something interesting to look into, especially from a psychological point of view, watching how the family interact with law enforcement and just generally following the whole process through, I always find really interesting.
Yeah, that definitely gives me something to look forward to watching this weekend. Another one to add to the schedule.
I know. Another fun and cheery thing for you to listen to or watch.
Yeah.
Do you have any true crime chat, or are you a bit light on it this week?
I am light on it this week. I don't really have any recommendations for our listeners this week, to be honest. I haven't really been watching documentaries and things. I've been busy with other stuff. So I'm sure I'll have some recommendations next week.
You Didn't Let Me Finish is a weekly true crime podcast with a difference, co-hosted by
me, former BBC News crime correspondent and author Ben Ando.
And me, journalist Victoria Mitzi.
Frenemies Victoria and I saw lockdown as an excuse to exploit our at times grim specialism and have, due to popular demand, continued on all the big platforms where you usually get your podcasts.
Oh, and free murder tips included. Catch us on Twitter at YDLMFpodcast. New episodes every Tuesday night.
Now, back to the show.
Why don't we get into your case? What have you got for us?
So this is the case of Alexandra Stewart, which was recommended by one of our fans, Tess. Have you heard of this case before?
No, I haven't, and I purposely didn't Google it, so I'm all
ears. Good girl. Okay, so Alexandra Stewart. I hadn't actually heard of this case either, which was quite surprising. But anyway, I'll get into it. Okay, so Alexandra Stewart, she was known as Alex, or Wee Al, to her friends and family, was a 22-year-old postal worker from Peebles. She played the position of goal defence for the Peebles Hotshots netball team and was regarded as brave, funny and wild. She was beautiful, vivacious and had an energetic personality. A friend described her as a genuine and buzzing lassie. Her Facebook page portrays a young woman who loved life, her friends and her family. She liked to have a drink, which is unsurprising given her very apparent sociable nature. She also took camping trips and enjoyed fishing. So from her Facebook page, you can just see she's just a young girl who is just enjoying life. Just
she
loving
sounds
life.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
How old was she?
22. Mm-hmm. And she just looked like, you know, just full of life, good fun, just very vibrant. On Saturday the 5th of August 2017, an annual rugby event took place in Peebles. I think it was the Peebles Rugby Sevens, but I'm not entirely sure. Alex had met up with a friend, Rebecca, and they'd gone on a bit of a pub crawl before ending up at a house party in an area of Peebles called Cuddyside. Nicholas Rogers had been drinking heavily and had broken into his locked prescription medication, piling the pills over his living room table. He sent a picture of this to a friend and claimed that he was considering suicide. His friend then invited Rogers over, where he appeared with a carrier bag of alcohol. He stayed for around an hour, expressing his dissatisfaction of his family and the care he had recently received from the mental health ward at the Borders General Hospital in Melrose. Around 3 or 4 a.m, Rogers made his way to the house party where Rebecca and Alex were. He was seen to be drinking either gin or vodka straight from the bottle. Cannabis, cocaine and ecstasy were also available at the party, and Rogers was later found to have cocaine in his system. Other people present at the party described Rogers' behaviour as strange, and he was expressive about his feelings that he had voiced earlier that night to his friend. One of the people at the party had spent considerable time talking to him and listening to his concerns. He claimed that although he still felt depressed, he did not wish to return to the mental health ward at Borders General Hospital. Around 11 a.m. that morning, so obviously the Saturday is when everybody's been out drinking, the house party has been going on, carried on to the wee hours of the morning, and this was on the Sunday morning basically, so a few stragglers left at the house party at 11 a.m. So there's only a few people left there, and Rogers was one of them, along with Alex and her friend Rebecca. Rogers was awoken by Alex and Rebecca singing happy birthday to a friend over FaceTime. When he was roused, he seemed angry and confused. Rebecca had reportedly avoided Rogers for the duration of the party, just purely because she got bad vibes from him. She just didn't want anything to do with him, so she had avoided him. It's believed that Rogers thought he was being laughed at by Rebecca and Alex, so just really kind of paranoid. It sounds like they were having a bit of a laugh, they were talking to a friend, it was kind of nothing to do with him, and you know, he just assumed that it was directed at him. Rogers retrieved a 7-inch knife from the kitchen and remarked, "You're not laughing now," whilst pointing the knife. He then kicked a table, which awoke another person in the room. That person then joined Alex and her friend on the sofa and attempted to reason with Rogers. Alex sat on the sofa between the two others, with her knees tucked under her chin. She was crying as well, so she's obviously frightened. Rogers slashed Alex across the legs, then uttered, "I fucked it now, I might as well kill someone," and proceeded to stab Alex Stewart in the chest. He apparently attempted to retrieve the knife, however it was too deeply embedded. After then assaulting Rebecca, Rogers just calmly walked out of the property and was later located in a nearby Tesco supermarket. Alex was taken to the Edinburgh Royal Infirmary, but sadly died from her injuries. Rogers had a history of psychiatric issues from a difficult childhood. In November 2013, Rogers had taken an overdose, but had survived and was assessed by a psychiatrist at the Royal Infirmary in Edinburgh. The psychiatrist had noted that the overdose appeared to have been triggered by anger issues on consumption of alcohol. Rogers was diagnosed as having bipolar personality disorder, but no evidence of psychosis that could have led to the extreme violence he committed against Alex Stewart. Rogers was offered counselling and psychiatric services but declined, and further impulsive overdoses followed. In 2016, Rogers was prescribed fluoxetine for depression. Now, this is an excerpt from the appeal documents. A few months later, he was described as quite chaotic, using drink, recreational drugs and anabolic steroids. He was exhibiting maladaptive personality traits rather than suffering from a true depressive illness. He was started on the antipsychotic quetiapine. In May 2017, Rogers was discharged from psychiatric follow-up, but took another overdose 2 months later. Rogers spent time in intensive care before being moved to a psychiatric hospital in Melrose. At this point, his medication was replaced with lamotrigine, which is an anticonvulsant mood stabiliser. Later the same month, Rogers expressed suicidal thoughts again and was prescribed diazepam. On a follow-up call to a psychiatric nurse, Rogers referred to himself as the Beast from the film Split and said he would not be attending his psychiatric appointment. Rogers had apparently doubled his intake of diazepam, and despite the professional advice not to consume alcohol with the drug, he continued to drink heavily. This had happened on more than one occasion. The following are quotes from the defence's appeal. Dr. Dixon, a consultant psychiatrist at Huntleyburn, the hospital in Melrose, had been in charge of the appellant's care in early July 2017. The appellant's diagnosis had been complicated by his drug use and personality issues. He had clear-cut symptoms of depression, which were unrelated to substance misuse. He had a bipolar 2 personality disorder, manifested in episodes of hypomania, unconnected to drugs or alcohol. The ingestion of drugs and/or alcohol made his disorder worse. There was no evidence of psychosis or loss of reality. In Dr. Dixon's view, there was no basis for the view that the appellant had multiple personalities, as the Beast had, or a personality disorder. Another quote from the defence's appeal is, in early August 2017, according to Dr. Campbell's report of her interview with him, the appellant had been having paranoid thoughts about what his girlfriend and her mother were saying about him and the reasoning behind his football coach's decision to drop him from the team. He had sold his car at undervalue and then gambled away the proceeds of some £2,500. So the defence argued that Rogers had diminished responsibility at the time of the attack due to psychiatric issues and that the jury should find him guilty of culpable homicide, which is obviously Scots law for manslaughter, as opposed to murder. On 31st of May 2018, the jury convicted Nicholas Rogers of murder and he was sentenced to a minimum term of 16 years before he could apply for parole. The officer who had apprehended Rogers in Tesco received a bravery award due to Rogers' conduct while being detained. The officer, Ross Falconer, noticed a man and his girlfriend arguing and made the connection to Rogers after hearing of the nearby stabbing incident on his radio. Rogers was apparently attempting to flee using his girlfriend's car. When Falconer attempted to detain Rogers, he repeatedly uttered that he would kill him and grabbed the officer's vest with his free hand while the other was cuffed. The officer activated the emergency call on his radio and two colleagues who were making their way to the stabbing incident instead diverted to provide assistance to Falconer. Rogers' lawyers appealed his conviction, but it was rejected. The appeal can actually be seen because it was televised. It is available on BBC iPlayer, so if anybody did want to go and have a look at the appeal, the programme is called Appeal Court, The End of the Line, and it's the first appeal to be featured on the programme. So that is the case of Alexandra Stewart.
God, that's so sad.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm really glad in a roundabout way. I hate using that term, but I'm satisfied that he was convicted of murder, because if he hadn't taken the recreational drugs and not adhered to the guidance of his doctors, then you could argue, you know what, there's definitely an argument for people that have a psychotic break or who are going through something, some kind of mental episode, that you know, that can happen. We know that happens. It's horrific and sometimes people do die as a result of it, but I don't think you can really hold someone fully responsible under that. But if you know that you've got mental health issues, you've been feeling depressed, feeling suicidal, you've been in hospital recently, you've just recklessly basically done what you wanted with your medication and then taken other drugs and drank as well, how can you say that he could have no idea that he would be unstable? And actually, for me, the worst part is when he's basically said, well, I've already screwed myself over now, I may as well just finish it. That's mm-hmm. the bit that really gets me, because that shows almost a logical train of thought. That's premeditation. Because mm-hmm. he could have just slashed her legs and then gone,
Oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah, that's it.
Also, as well, I mean, the earlier report from the psychiatrist said that the triggers seem to be the anger as a result of alcohol consumption. You know, mixed, whether it was because it was mixed with his medication or because of his mental health issues or both. So there was already earlier knowledge the fact that the alcohol triggered a bad reaction. Now, the night that this happened, obviously he had broke into his prescribed medication. So I don't know if that meant like it was controlled doses so that he couldn't, because he'd taken an overdose previously, if there was, I don't know how that works, but presumably he wouldn't have normally had access to it, but he managed to get access to it, piled the pills on the table, sent, you know, a photo to a friend, you know, say, call for help, whatever. There was mention in the court documents as well that I've never heard the term drinking Mickey Finns.
Yeah.
Which is alcohol laced with drugs.
There is a type of alcohol called Mickey Finns, which is a type of schnapps, but in slang, a Mickey Finn is a drink laced with a psychoactive drug or an incapacitating agent given without someone to their knowledge.
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds like from the report that he knew and that he was referring to, you know, consuming Mickey Finns as in the alcohol laced with drugs, and that's what he was doing. So yeah, he was aware of that, and you know he was drinking heavily. It does sound like he was on a downward spiral. He's drinking straight alcohol. He's suicidal. You know, things aren't good, but he's refusing psychiatric services, counselling. Didn't want to go back to the hospital. Didn't want to attend his appointment with, you know, follow up with his psychiatric nurse. He'd actually said, "I'm not attending my appointment. I'm in the pub," and he kept referring to himself as the Beast. You know, like the Beast doesn't do this or the Beast doesn't do that. So yeah, there's some serious concerns there.
I mean, he's clearly had mental health issues. No one's disputing that whatsoever. It's just what frame of mind you're in at the time, because generally people that are suicidal generally aren't a harm to other people. And just the way that it's all gone down, it's been, you're laughing at me, I'll show you. And then because he is at the end of his tether, by the sounds of it, he is deeply, deeply depressed. I don't know what he thought was going to be the outcome. He's done it. He's just got followed through. So it does show that, you know, that isn't an action that someone who is entirely mentally stable would take. But the fact that he's followed those things through, see if he was saying, you know, the Beast did it and that kind of thing, and he was trying to claim that he was having a psychotic episode or he was hallucinating or having a psychotic break or something like that. It's less normal for it to be a very clear, I can see you sitting as a human being and I'm making a rational connection. Mm-hmm. It's more, you know, they're imagining that you're someone else or you're something else or...
Yes.
The situation is something abstract or weird. It's a little less common for them to be that clear on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see how they could... it kind of does feel, and I don't ever want to diminish or undermine someone's mental health issues, it does feel a bit like he's just latched onto this Beast idea. Is that unfair?
No, that was the vibe that I got from it. It felt like... It didn't sound to me that he was actively trying to get better. Mm-hmm. You know, he's obviously, it's hard to say, isn't it, from articles and things when you don't know people personally, when you haven't been there or, you know, had any interaction with them or anything like that. When you're just reading it in articles, it's hard to gauge. But he's actively refusing to attend appointments. He's deliberately taking overdoses. He's consuming large quantities of alcohol. You know, he's also then taking illegal drugs as well, cocaine.
I think not attending appointments and taking too many drugs can be, it can happen with people who are just really struggling and really suffering with their mental health. I think that when you go into taking extracurricular drugs and recreational activities that are very, very harmful to your mental health, which he will have been told multiple times by doctors, that's when I struggle to have sympathy.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and I'm sure it will have been looked at throughout, is the duty of care of the mental health services and the medical profession, I'm sure will have been taken into account. It sounds like if they've had him in any kind of hospital, in a ward, they've definitely taken it seriously, but at some point they've only got so many resources. They can't chase down every single person constantly that doesn't show up for an appointment.
Sure.
There's only so much that they can do. And if someone is managing to live a fairly high functioning life, you know, he's got a girlfriend, he's playing, he had a hobby, he was managing to maintain a sport. It's really difficult because, you know, when you're looking at it from the family's point of view, you're going to say, why was he even able to do that? Why was someone with, mm-hmm. you know, that fragile mental health able to be free and be in a position where he was able to do such a thing? But I do think that having had family members working in social care and similar services, they're overwhelmed. They really are overwhelmed. And like I said, with a fully grown adult who hasn't necessarily been violent to themselves or others in such a way before, it's really hard. There's always going to be a first time, quite honestly.
Yeah.
You know, for someone to be sectioned, they have to do something that requires sectioning. So it sounds like his behaviour, whilst it was concerning, wasn't concerning enough to have him sectioned, which is a serious step that they have to take to detain someone.
Yeah. And it seems that he had actually discharged himself from the care before. So,
and someone would have had to allow that. They have to do risk assessments before someone's allowed to discharge themselves. So he would have had to present in a stable enough way for them to let him discharge himself. So it's really difficult. It's just an all round sad one. Someone's been really struggling. Was this a cry for help? You know, it could have been. Can we argue that there's an element of recklessness and selfishness involved because of him taking those drugs? Yeah, I would say so. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't help the family, does it? None of it does. No. And a young woman who just wanted to have a nice night.
Mm-hmm.
Really shit. I hate ones like that.
Yeah, it's just so unfair. You know, she just was sort of in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So it reminds me of the Margaret Atwood saying. That's the woman who wrote The Handmaid's Tale. And it says, men are afraid that women will laugh at them. Women are afraid that men will kill them. It is a feminist quote. It just highlights the difference in the genders. And it's something that I've heard in different crime stories across the years, and it can trigger a lot of upset if a man does feel that a woman has laughed at him or belittled him or humiliated him in some way, and especially if this person was already not in the greatest frame of mind. It's obviously completely enraged him, and that's been the kind of the straw that broke the camel's back.
So maybe you have a light-hearted crime-related story or tidbit for us?
Yes, I do. Okay. I've got another Florida man story because I love them.
Plenty of them.
Yeah. So this one's from the New York Post. There's quite a few on there, but I'll tell you the title. Man busted trying to steal full rack of ribs stashed in his pants.
Okay.
Pants obviously mean trousers in America, guys, so I'm hoping they weren't stuffed in his underwear, but who knows? I mean, but at this stage, I'm not even questioning it. So a Florida man with a feast stuffed in his pants was arrested trying to sneak out of a grocery store, police said. Mele Alvarez Aguilar, who was 26, was taken into custody on a petty merchant theft charge after walking out of a store in Indiantown on December the 15th. 2018 this is. So they further searched him. They removed a full rack of ribs from his waistband and there were also, wait for it, 9 pieces of fried chicken, 2 packs of hamburger buns and some mashed potatoes.
What? How did he fit all that down there?
Also, I'm not being mad, but like why would you, surely hamburger buns are going to get squashed. Like, I'm maybe thinking brioche buns, but any kind of hamburger buns are going to get squished. Mashed potatoes are already squished. I can light you away with that.
Yeah.
Fried chicken, are they cooked? Are they uncooked? Are they like, you know, the cheap nasty ones you get in the freezer section? Like, and are they wrapped? Or are these 9 pieces? Like,
yeah. Well, also,
I was going to ask. It's got like a boneless box down there. Just like,
yeah, well, what about the mashed potato as well? How is that packaged?
Doesn't say. I have questions.
Why?
I have so many questions. Yeah, so there you go.
Where did you stole it from?
A convenience store.
Okay.
Yeah.
I must have been high or something.
He said he was smelled of booze and was intoxicated. So there you go. A full rack of ribs. I mean, it's definitely like a drunk person meal. Like,
yeah.
Full rack of ribs. But also, are these things cooked or uncooked? Because, you know, like I said, I have so many questions. And why did he steal hamburger buns but no hamburgers? And why did he steal 2 packs of hamburger buns? And why not just steal potatoes? Do you think, like why not just steal, like, fries? Like, why did he steal mashed potatoes? Was he trying to be healthy? Is it like when I go to McDonald's and I get a Diet Coke on my large meal? He's like, oh, I better not get fries. That's too unhealthy. I've already got a rack of ribs, 9 pieces of fried chicken and hamburger buns. Like, maybe I should rein it in a bit.
I'll bet this guy, he must have been high or something.
Yeah, I mean, mental. But he looks utterly unrepentant in his mugshot. He's probably raging they didn't get to eat them.
Yeah. I bet the people that confiscate them had a good snack, though, unless they returned it to the shop owner.
Let's snack.
Actually, do you know what? Yeah, that's
person's pant food.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe. Oh my God, I've got a great idea. Do you remember in the 90s when you used to wear those cargo pants that had loads and loads of pockets?
Pockets.
That's
yeah.
the only thing that'd be good for nowadays.
Or eclipse jeans, the really baggy jeans the boys used to wear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could hide a lot in there.
I don't think you'd get a full rack of ribs in them though.
I do.
You could definitely get 9 pieces of fried chicken. But you might have to take apart the hamburger bun pack and like put a bun in each compartment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be like a really crappy magician. Just like...
And also, there's no way you'd be able to walk naturally.
Doesn't sound like anything about this was well thought out.
No, you're right.
He did not think this through at all. You've been listening to Murder, She Spoke. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and view on your podcast platform of choice. If you want to get in contact with us, whether it's a case recommendation, some feedback, or just to say hi, you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We will see you in a week. Bye!